first gentleman is Greg Trapp. So he's going to talk to us about a couple of things that he is a collector of. And the first one, you know, this Navy memorabilia about some of the ships that carry the name of his state, New Mexico. But he's also going to talk about some antique firearms, you know, that he collects and he's done some repair on and he does, you know, shoot. Greg.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I really want to begin by saying that a hobby is something that can be fun, it can be exciting. To me, a hobby really should be something, though, that transports you to another place, another world. It can fuel the imagination. It can transport you to places, historical or otherwise, that people are interested in. So whatever it is, if a person collects dolls from the 1800s, you know, that can transport you to that time and place. For me, I've always been interested in history. I've always been interested in military history and particularly naval history. My father was a graduate of the Naval Academy, and I grew up around boats and water. I always had my own boats growing up. So there's sort of a natural evolution there. And what really kind of got my interest was the advent of the internet and eBay. That made things much more achievable, also much, much more dangerous for me, because all of a sudden the whole world is out there for hobbyists. So the internet, there are groups out there that are centered around particular hobbies. It's a great way to really meet people and also to start collecting things. So we first signed up, my wife and I, for eBay back in 2003. And I fairly quickly began to collect items related to blindness. So in my study where I'm speaking from, which my wife calls my museum, I have a whole host of antique Braille writers, a Smith writer, IBM Bakes pocket writer, Anderson and Sorensen, Smith Corona, all kinds of things like that. On the wall behind me, I have quite a few artifacts related to Helen Keller, Samuel Gridley Howe, Laura Bridgman. I just for fun got on eBay last night and looked at some of the prices, and they've gone up astronomically. So a hobby can also be a good investment. That's why I tell my wife occasionally when I do buy things, and I think it's really, really good to have a supportive spouse or partner. And sometimes I'll remind my wife that I could be collecting Harley-Davidson motorcycles, or I could have a boat or things like that when I get into a little bit of trouble with my purchases. So it's really something that is so much fun. So gradually, I kind of morphed into collecting things that interest me related to military history. One of my favorite favorite Helen Keller artifacts is a signed letter from 1942, where Helen Keller talks about the loss of liberty at home and abroad. Really a remarkable statement. That was from June of 92. So I also have a helmet from World War II, and the liner was made by the Jewish Guild for the Blind in New York. So kind of morphing my interest in blindness items, then military history, and then I kind of serendipitously came across items related to the battleship USS New Mexico and started collecting those items. And that ended up becoming a bit of an obsession for me. New Mexico is a landlocked state, and there really was very little related to the history of the battleship. And I felt like I almost had an obligation to protect and preserve some of the artifacts and memorabilia that were out there. And the timing was pretty close to ideal, because back in that time, there were a lot of sailors who served on New Mexico who were aging into their 70s, 80s, 90s. Now the very youngest would be in their early to mid 90s. So there were a lot of things that were getting sold, and I wanted to see those be put into a single source and not scattered all about. So it can be really fascinating too, because there's so many different elements of a hobby. So for collecting things related to USS New Mexico, I'm holding up a toy ship. This is probably from the 30s, made from zinc. So there are all kinds of collectors of just these toys. This little battleship has little tiny wheels on it. So I have a whole collection of toy battleships. And I also have a collection of military recognition models. This is sort of a crude depiction of the battleship, but I also have much more precise models that were used during World War II when it was discovered that 3D models provided better recognition training for pilots who might be at risk of attacking their own ships. So that's kind of cool. I'm holding up a launch medal from 1917 when the ship was launched. I have several of these in my collection, so that gets to be fun. And sometimes things sort of work together serendipitously. So there is a nuclear submarine, USS New Mexico, which is a Virginia-class nuclear submarine. And that submarine was launched about 9 years ago. So there began to be fueled a little bit more interest in the battleship. And I ended up going to one of the ceremonies related to the nuclear submarine, and then I got connected with some of the people who've been involved in the naming of USS New Mexico, SSN 779, and shared some of my collection of artifacts related to USS New Mexico BB-40, the battleship which served from the very end of World War I through World War II and was scrapped in 1947. And that ended up with some of my collection actually being put onto the nuclear submarine USS New Mexico, the primary item being a print from 1915, which was put on a tribute table in the mess hall of the nuclear submarine. The battleship was hit by two kamikazes, which killed about 80 sailors. So there's a tribute to those sailors on the modern USS New Mexico. And my contribution of that and my involvement ended up with my being invited on a VIP cruise onto the submarine USS New Mexico. So in 2011, I got to spend about 12 hours on a nuclear submarine diving 602 feet under the water, doing something that they call angles and gangles, which is where the submarine goes at high speed up and then down, kind of porpoising, which is really, really fun. And at the time, it was thought that I was the only blind person who had ever been at sea on a nuclear submarine. I'm not sure if that's still the case. My hobby, as it grew, continued to kind of intersect with sort of things that were taking place. And one of those was the 100th anniversary of the launch of USS New Mexico. So I ended up working on a book related to that and ended up co-authoring a history of USS New Mexico, which I'm holding up here, myself and three other individuals. There were two groups of us who were working on a book around the same time, and we ended up putting our resources together. And because I had a very large collection of photos and other documents, it really contributed greatly to the book and helped out in that regard. So that's been a lot of fun. But there's so many elements to collecting. For example, on Monday, I purchased a cover. So covers are part of postal collectability. And there are people who collect these covers. Some of them are related to historic events. Some of them, it's because of the stamps. But there are naval covers out there. And it's not been something that has terribly interested me, but I have purchased quite a few of them when there were certain special items. For example, what I bought on Monday was from September 2nd, 1945, which was when the surrender ceremonies took place at Tokyo Bay. And that particular cover was canceled on the 2nd. I had one that had the same envelope that was canceled in October. So that began a little bit of a bidding war, and I ended up getting it for $150. Which is a little pricey for covers. I promised to make my wife some cinnamon toast, which is one of her favorites, so she appreciated that when I bought that. Again, great to have a supportive spouse. But there you kind of have the intersection of people who might be collecting covers from all of the ships that were at Tokyo Bay. So it's not just USS New Mexico items. I've actually enjoyed something of a monopoly on that. So I've been able to collect about 200 of the ship's newspapers from between 1918 to about 1942, when they ended up being stopped. There were wartime rationing, things like that. I have the 14-inch gun manuals. So New Mexico had a set of four turrets, each of which had three guns, quote unquote. Each gun was 58 feet long, fired a 1,400-pound shell out to 20 miles. So I've got a couple manuals, one from World War II, another from the 1920s. I've got a 5-inch gun manual, all of those picked up on eBay. I've got a general information book that was from 1919. That's the most expensive item in my collection. It has about 40 blueprints in it that fold out. And that item was actually helpful in putting together our book, because I was able to correct some inaccuracies in the historical record, the exact size of the ship's propeller, little details like that. So tremendous fun to be able to collect things. Having the ability to mark items in Braille is helpful when you've got literally thousands of ephemera, which is a term for paper collectibles. So that's really been a fun hobby for me. And it's led for me to be involved in the Navy League. I'm currently the Navy League historian, and I've been the vice president of the Navy League. And I imagine that when I eventually retire, I'll become more involved in the Navy League and will be able to spend more time with that hobby as it sort of takes over. Robert also mentioned that I collect antique firearms, which is true. As a historian, I really enjoy being able to experience history in a palpable way. And if you're able to collect something that is a part of history, for example, in my study here above my hutch, I have a trapdoor Springfield that was made in 1893. It's the cadet rifle, and that's the rifle that the United States Cavalry had in the 1870s, 1880s, even into the 1890s, when it was replaced by the Krag rifle, which I also have. As a person interested in history, to be able to go out and fire something like a trapdoor Springfield, which is a single-shot breech-loading rifle, and then fire something like a 1898 Krag, which is a bolt-action five-shot repeater, really puts you in touch with history. And if you think about the Spanish-American War, our regular army was armed with Krag rifles. The National Guard had the single-shot trapdoor rifles. So literally they were armed with a single-shot weapon when the Spanish troops were armed with much more modern Mauser rifles. So kind of a way to really experience history. I have a number 4 Smith & Wesson lemon squeezer, and it's one of my favorites. Lemon squeezer is just a term that relates to the fact that that particular revolver has a grip safety, and that grip safety was something that was designed to make that design of revolver safe from being accidentally discharged by children, which is a fascinating thing. They started making those in 1888. They were made all the way up until 1940, but they incorporated safety features so that a child could not accidentally fire a revolver. One of the things that I like about it is that Teddy Roosevelt often carried a 38 caliber lemon squeezer, and there's this great story how he was about to meet the archbishop, and he'd forgotten his revolver, and he says, "My goodness, I can't go meet with the archbishop. I forgot my revolver." So it's really sort of a great way to put yourself, to transport yourself back to that time, a different era. One other nice thing about antiques is that if a firearm was made before 1899, then it's subject to different federal requirements. So they are not treated like a modern firearm. So it's quite literally in most states possible to purchase a legal antique firearm through the mail without any kind of background checks. I like to collect Smith & Wesson or other quality guns like my trapdoor or like the Krag rifle, which if you're careful, if you are very knowledgeable, and if you know what you're doing, those are very three important ifs. It is possible to safely fire them if you're very careful to use the right ammunition and if the gun is in good condition that can safely be fired. And I always say best to have it checked out by a qualified gunsmith. That's the lawyer in me speaking. But it's also fun to be able to repair and fix and modify, take apart. I have a quote-unquote modern, although it's still an antique, Mauser broom handle pistol, and I recently refinished a pair of grips that I bought for it, and I bought them without realizing that they hadn't been finished. So you know, you get to use other techniques when it comes to woodworking, things such as that are just fun. I have other modern guns, and one of the things that I like to do is to go to the range. I will go with a friend of mine, and he'll act as my spotter, and I'll use electronic hearing protectors. So they allow me to hear normal conversation, but also they protect the ears. And ideally, if you have a shooting partner, both of you all have those kinds of hearing protectors that are electronic. And it's fun.
You have just a little bit less than 10 minutes.
I appreciate that, okay. Robert. I'll try to have time for questions here. So one of the neat things about going to the range when you have kind of unusual firearms is it gets a lot of attention. There are people, you know, to the left and right of you who are all firing, you know, guns that look like they were first prize at a Tupperware party, the polymer frame pistols. And when you go there with a Krag or a Mauser broom handle, you really get to be the center of attention, and it's tremendous fun. You just have to be sure that you're in a safe place, that you have a shooting partner who is able to guide you. There are all kinds of different techniques for firing modern and antique guns. Some people have, they buy greeting cards that have the music that's played, and it kind of gives you an audio signal you can shoot for, things like that. So I really encourage people who are interested in hobbies not to be deterred by any kind of preconceptions. You know, whatever you enjoy, whatever you like to do, I encourage you to seek after that, to find a way to use good alternative techniques and to enjoy yourself. And I think a good hobby can lead to other things. It can help with friendships. It can lead to other opportunities in life. And with that, Robert, I'd be happy to take questions.
If you can stay with us until the top of the hour, we could definitely have questions then. That's kind of how we've been doing the last couple of days. Because one thing I would like to hear a little bit more, you mentioned Braille. So what other alternatives, because you're talking about the eBay, so you must use the computer. Just what other kind of alternatives, you know, techniques you use to make this work?
Sure. Well, of course, I have JAWS on my computer. So eBay is accessible. It's not difficult to use. Sometimes listers, eBay sellers don't include a good written description, which I really don't like. The cover that I bought on Monday, it said it was some September 2nd, but I didn't know if it had been canceled on September 2nd. So I have an option. I can email the seller, or in my case, I had my sighted driver look at the picture and tell me that it was canceled on September 2nd. The stock refinishing, woodworking, I think that there are different kinds of refinishing techniques. I like True Oil, which is for me very, very easy. It's an old kind of finish, but it works well. It's very forgiving. In terms of refinishing the grips on my Mauser broom handle, that was a little bit challenging because I wanted them to be darker than what they were when I bought them. But because there's a left and a right grip handle, they were absorbing the stain differently. So I kept having to try to get them so that they would be matching. And that required, again, the use of a sighted person. I would say, how is this now? And eventually I got them so that the two were balanced out. But I had one that was really slow to absorb the stain, and that took a little while. Braille is so important because it allows you to label items. I have, as I said, thousands of different artifacts. I don't have them all labeled, but that's going to be sort of a retirement project for me. I'm the director of the New Mexico Commission for the Blind. And you know, when I do retire, this would be something that would take up a lot of my time to label those. But it's good to be organized to make sure that you can get your hands on what you're needing, and Braille is really vital for that. So key parts of my collection, I do put a Braille label, not on the artifact itself, but usually on a plastic sleeve, if it's something that I'm wanting to be able to access at some point later. So those kinds of techniques are really helpful. I mentioned the electronic earmuffs for shooting sports. I think that's really, really vital. I remember one time I was at an indoor range, which I don't recommend, and I was shooting and my partner was behind me and he got a phone call and he went and he left and he answered his phone, and I didn't realize that, and I was still kind of, you know, blasting away at the target. I had 10 rounds in my gun and, you know, how am I doing, Frank? Bang, bang, bang. But knowing where your target is, being confident in your direction is what kept me safe. Having the right interest, I think, and getting on the internet and finding out about what your hobby is, if it's sports cards or coins or stamps, dolls, collecting dresses, collecting cabinet cards, there are all kinds of hundreds and hundreds of collectible areas out there. I think we'll see a new fad of people collecting face masks eventually here. So you name it, people collect it.